I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Washington State mom who yanked her daughter out of middle school over an anti-ICE protest in a now viral video joins us. Plus, we're going to talk about efforts to regulate the 3D printing of so-called ghost guns. And a malpractice ruling could be the beginning of the end for radical gender surgeries. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And we're going to talk about a mom today who has one hell of a commitment to giving common sense a comeback. But first, a little housekeeping. We are not going to have a live show tomorrow. Why? Because we will be down in Olympia fighting the good fight, and we want you to be there as well. So no excuses. It's our time for choosing. We've been saying that over and over. We're going to stand up for girls. We're going to stand up for parents. There's a few things happening in Olympia. So first, Let's Go Washington is going to have a rally on the steps of the Capitol at 2:30 p.m. I will be there. Brian Haywood will be there. Jamie Reed, a whistleblower on radical gender ideology, will be there, as will Tish Hyman, the woman from L.A., now running for mayor of L.A., who was thrust into the conversation over men in women's spaces, boys and girls spaces, after her viral video inside a Gold's Gym. So we're going to be there rallying, demanding that lawmakers give these two initiatives a hearing. But of course, we know that Democrats in control are not going to do that. So after the rally at 2:30, there are going to be two, I would call them mock hearings. They're listening sessions with some of these young girls, female athletes, and parents. Republican state lawmakers are going to have two hearings, one for the House side, one for the Senate side. They're going to be informal, but they'll be broadcast on TVW. There's going to be official testimony. And this is basically the way of saying, okay, the party in power doesn't want to hear from these girls. The party in power doesn't want to hear from these parents on why these issues are so important. And so we'll hold hearings without them anyway. And so we really hope that you guys can join us in Olympia tomorrow afternoon and into the evening as these quasi hearings take place. All right. There was a video that went bonkers on social media over the weekend, understandably so. So it takes place in Auburn, Washington. There's a mom named Erica who shows up to pick up her daughter at school at a middle school, Olympic Middle School, and is confronted with a mass student protest, again, at a middle school against ICE. This mom decides in that moment she is going to yank her child out of public school.
This is my daughter's middle school being allowed to protest ICE agents disrupting traffic, having everyone honk. I'm pulling my child from school today. I'm here to pull my child from the school right now.
Perfect. So you want to withdraw
it? Yep. This is unbelievable. I can't believe my kid is in this environment right now. I'm blown away. Can she be brought down to the office right now, please?
Again, if we have everybody out there, yeah, we'll get her.
I'm blown away. As a mother?
Yeah. Well, so I can explain to you what we're doing.
This is disrupting traffic and my child's education. I will sign. Are you serious?
Yeah, because there's unfortunately some parental agreements where it's
every time I bring it in, she doesn't check it because she knows me. That's interesting.
That's okay. I just want to make sure Erica's
okay. Mm-hmm. We'll get it for you. We're just erring on the side of caution, honestly.
Yeah, this is it. What about the other side? What about my family? As I walked up, I was getting booed by every single student.
Thank you.
By the way, I'm making that known. Because I didn't honk, I pulled up to make sure everyone was okay.
You want to come back and talk?
Absolutely not.
Did we already get your student?
Yeah.
No, not yet.
I mean, we called for him,
yeah,
and everything, though?
Yeah, she thought it was.
Okay. Will you go make sure?
And I want to be escorted to there because absolutely, every single student booed me because I pulled up here, rolled down my window. Is everything okay? What's going on? To run into this? I didn't honk. I parked as soon as I walked up. I'm telling you right now, this is going to be a huge problem, guys. I cannot believe that my child is in this environment right now. I'm ashamed and I'm embarrassed as a parent and as an adult. Wow, I thought my kid was safe here.
They're very safe here.
Yeah, very safe here. Well, the mom doesn't feel that way. So again, that's at Olympic Middle School. We're talking about a seventh grade girl. Mom comes to pick it up, had no idea what was going on, was booed and harassed by middle schoolers outside her daughter's school, decides in that moment, I'm pulling my kid out of this school. And there's this really emotional moment. And the mom says she never does this. She never picks up her camera and films when she's, you know, picking her daughter up. But this, she understood, was this very profound moment and had this emotional exchange with her daughter in the car afterward.
I'm sorry. I did not expect this. I'm sorry, baby. I will let you pick whatever school you want. I don't care if I have to pay for it, my baby. I don't care if I have to pay for it. Any school you want.
Yeah. So that mom, Erica, is going to be joining us momentarily to talk about what was going through her mind and what she plans to do moving forward. I do want to talk a little bit about, because this is this phenomenon that's happening across the country. I mean, there were videos over the weekend that came out from anti-ICE protests at elementary schools across the country. I mean, there's videos of little kids at public schools and private schools, by the way, across the country, where adults have helped them make signs, are leading them in chants against Donald Trump and against ICE. This is insane. These kids are so young, they have no idea what's going on. This is a middle school. Unreal. And so this video that she posted goes crazy over the weekend with people just cheering her on, aghast at all of this that's happening. The Auburn School District put out a long statement about it, and they clarified a couple things, although I didn't see anyone making the claims that they're now trying to debunk. But they said the walkout that occurred was not school sanctioned, organized, or encouraged by our school or district. This was a student-led event that circulated through social media, and as soon as we were made aware of it, we immediately took action to ensure student safety. Students who chose to participate were marked absent. Those absences were recorded as unexcused. They go on to say, while the school did not encourage or promote this activity, we are guided by school board policy and state law regarding student rights. Specifically, they mentioned two policies, one having to do with freedom of speech, the other having to do with the right to assemble. And they say with freedom of speech, the policy 3220 affirms that student expression is supported as long as it does not substantially disrupt the educational process or infringe upon the rights of others. Now, I would say that having hundreds of kids walk out of class in the middle of the day substantially disrupts the educational process, but who am I? And then it says policy 3223 states that students have the right to assemble peacefully. However, the school retains the authority to regulate the time, place, and manner of assemblies to ensure safety and order. And so the school talks about how, oh, we didn't encourage this. We didn't. First of all, I have a hard time believing that there weren't individual teachers in your district or any district that had young kids walking out of class to protest whatever it is that didn't encourage it in some way, especially when you get kids this young. There are adults that are turning them on to these issues and spreading anti-Trump, anti-ICE propaganda in public schools. Having hundreds of kids walk out at the same time in a middle school or an elementary school is not something that just sprung up naturally. These kids are being indoctrinated. And when you say that you retain the authority to regulate the time, place, and manner, and you say, you know, we didn't sanction this, you had teachers out there in vests helping to help the kids to be able to navigate where they were going. And you can say that's about keeping the kids safe. But to a parent who pulls up and sees this mass of children taking to the streets and all of these things, booing at her, whatever it was, and teachers out there helping them along, you can tell how that looks. And then you have the mayor of the city of Auburn, who made it known, and Nancy Backus, I gotta call you, girlfriend, because what's going on with you? I know you're a reasonable person. I know you're a fan of this show. Why are you celebrating kids walking out of school I don't care what the issue is. They're there to learn. They're there to get an education. They can protest before school. They can protest after school. They can do it on their own time, but taxpayers are paying for them to be there and to get an education. And when students are leaving school grounds, what happens if a kid gets hit by a car? What happens if a kid gets shot in a drive-by shooting? What happens if a kid gets plucked off the streets by a pedophile during school hours? And you've got the mayor, in a long statement, celebrating this, the school allowing it to happen. Nancy Backus, the mayor of Auburn, said Friday afternoon, hundreds of Auburn students gathered peacefully outside City Hall to share their voices, stand up for issues that deeply matter to them. She said, that kind of curiosity and involvement is something I truly admire. I'm proud of how these students showed up, looked out for one another, and engaged in a meaningful way. I'm sorry, no. They're kids. And they should be in school during the day because there's no way that you as a school district or as a city can protect them, can properly protect them. And what is going to happen, as I said, if a car hits one of them while they're marching to City Hall from school? Who's liable for that? Taxpayers? You don't think you're going to have a big fat payout because you let young kids walk out of school and into the street and into traffic? I saw videos all over the country where a kid easily could have been hit by a car. And I'm not saying kids give up their First Amendment rights because they're enrolled in a public school. But schools have an obligation to make sure. What, at what age? Okay, let's say third grader wants to walk out of school and walk into the street to protest Donald Trump. You're not going to let them do that. You're not going to let a third grader just walk out of school for any reason. Because why? You're responsible for them. You're responsible for their safety. So you're not going to. So at what age does that responsibility go away? You're certainly not going to let a third grader do it, so it's okay for a junior high school student to do it. We have a serious problem on our hands here. The safety element is totally different than you have the indoctrination element. So as I said, video goes crazy viral. This mom, just a normal single mom trying to do her thing, ends up all over the place. And I will say she was met with overwhelming love and support for what she did for her child in that moment. Her name is Erica Franklin, and she joins us now on Undivided. Erica, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Crazy weekend or not?
Fast. I don't have words to express how it's making me feel, but I am very blown away and grateful for the love and support. It's something that I've never had before. And this magnitude, of course, my family, love and support, but this magnitude is mind-blowing for me and my family.
Yeah. Well, what made you pull up to your child's school to take her out that day? Is it because you knew that the protest was happening?
No, I absolutely knew nothing. I was just on my regular routine. This is just what I do. And normally when I go to pull my daughter or pick her up from school, I don't pull in the front of the school. I started my routine in the back by handicap because I am. And it's just easier access for her to get to me. And so, but this day when I come my way normally, I have to turn and see the front of the school. So I see this and my heart immediately just went on fire. And so I pull up to where the crowd is, and there's teachers out there in vests directing traffic and trying to keep things under control. And I asked him, I said, what's going on? Is everything okay? Like, and he looks at me like this and he goes, it's a protest. I said, are all the kids out here? Is my kid out here? And he said, I don't know. So I pull up and I flipped around and I parked in front of the school, and then that's when I started recording.
This is my daughter's middle school being allowed to protest ICE agents.
So you had just come to get your daughter from school, because was this toward the end of the school day?
This was the ICE have an alarm set 1:45 every afternoon to head out and get my parking spot at school every day.
Wow.
And that's what I was doing.
Wow. Now, your daughter was not at the protest, you found out, correct?
Absolutely not. Her and her friends stayed in class. A lot of them were confused. Didn't know. They didn't know what a walkout was. They don't know what a protest is.
This is unbelievable. I can't believe my kid is in this environment right now. I'm blown away.
Yeah, has the school reached out to you personally since Friday?
As a matter of fact, literally 60 seconds before I did this, the administrator of the school district called me, and because I had left a lengthy, very upset voicemail, I kept it as respectful as I could. But she called me and said, I would like to speak with you and this and that. I said, well, I have a meeting here, like literally in the next minute. So I'm going to have to call you back this afternoon. I will do that, but I have a lot. I have another interview and I have a bunch of things that I need to jump into for Remington. So I will call her back. But I am going in 10 toes down, chest fully out, no excuses.
Yeah.
I want answers to what's going to change, what's going to be done. Regardless, my kid's never coming back to the school district, but obviously now I have a voice and I want change. And it's not just about me and mine. These kids. I'm sorry. I did not expect this. I'm sorry, baby. I will let you pick whatever school you want. I don't care if I have to pay for it. My baby. I don't care if I have to pay for it. Any school you want.
So, Erica, today is your daughter at school?
No. She is home. She's here. And she's good. She's good. She's not mad at me. And I knew she wouldn't be. I just had to say that because nothing's coming in between the relationship with me and my kids, ever.
Yeah.
And especially not this. And she knows what's right, and she has her own beliefs too, so she's good, and I'm so proud of her.
Yeah.
She's strong.
So I don't want to share too much that you don't want to share, but you did tell me, you know, you're a single mom. I mean, do you have the means and ability to homeschool her, to send her to a private school? I mean, how are you going to manage that?
I do know that realistically, homeschool is the ultimate safest thing for her. My oldest son, he is high-functioning Asperger's autism, so he does WAVA here, homeschool.
And that's
straight A. He thrives, but Remington is his polar opposite. Mm. When COVID happened and she had to be homeschooled, she dropped 3 grade levels. And just these past 2 years, she has worked very hard to be at 7th grade level. And her report card, she got extremely rewarded for it. She's worked so hard. So I just want to maintain that, and I want her to be safe. I want proper education. And now to come to find out after all of this, a lot of this was being pushed in these classrooms. And no one could tell me different because my daughter and her friends have firsthand told me what these teachers say, what type of news sources they use, and what they push, the subjects they push, even in English. In English, we have these articles, we want you to read them and look at the grammar and look at the structure of the paragraphs, this and that. Look at the subject of them. You know what I mean? So with school, I have a really hard feeling that I'm going to have to homeschool her for at least a good chunk of time till it's hopefully safer. But if I'm a mama to where any force against me, I'm going to find a way. I'm going to make it happen. So if there is an opportunity, like our church, I've been told, has a Christian school that she could go to. And I don't know financially how that would work. But the most important thing is that she stays on her grade level and that she has a fair opportunity for a proper education in America. That is the priority. So whichever way it goes, I'm just going to make it happen. I don't know how. God's on my side. It's going to happen. She's going to get the education because I have Jesus Christ on my side and so does my family. So it's going to work out. I know that. I just don't know how yet.
Yeah. There's a lot of parents cheering you on online, just like, you go, Mama Bear. And I think just watching you do something that is so difficult. I mean, it's a difficult thing, I imagine, also as a single parent, you know, trying to find time. And you said your older son, WAVA, is at the Virtual Learning Academy. So that's where.
Yeah, here in Washington. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. The teachers are literally amazing people. They're great. And the classes are, you know, smaller and stuff, very interactive, and they have to be interactive too. So it's great. It's WAVA online schooling here in Washington.
Yeah. Well, and I know right now Democrats in Olympia are trying to make it more difficult to send your kids to online learning, more difficult to homeschool your kids because they want to keep kids in those public school systems for the dollars. What would you say to other parents who have wanted to do something like what you did, but just haven't found the courage or fortitude to do it yet?
Take some of my courage. Anyone that knows me personally from back where I'm from or here out in Washington, I have never been afraid to stand up for any child and put myself right between me and that danger to protect any child, not even mine. Any parent that feels that they have a little bit of courage but hesitate, come be my friend. I'll be your friend. I don't have a lot of friends until yesterday, you know, but let's build an army. Let's make change. Let's save these kids. And as cliche and ridiculous as that sounds to some narrow-minded people out here, let's save these kids. If I have a voice now, come stand with me. Stand with me. Let's do it together. But it's got to happen, because if somebody doesn't do something now, we're done.
Yeah.
We're done. And the kids, I felt a couple years ago, it's like these kids are going to become the frontline shields. And I was saying it out loud, and we were praying about it, and now it's here.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I'm never, ever going to let anyone intimidate me and silence me again about my truth and standing up for what is right in my country. And I know millions of us want it back. I may not be able to get across what I want to say appropriately or softly or sweetly, because I am quite rough around the edges, and I try not to be, but I want a voice, and I'm glad that I have one, and I cannot express how grateful I am for this love and support. I don't know if I'm ever going to wrap my head around it, you know?
I had DM'd you and just said, hey, you know, there's so many people who want to do something for you, and you seemed very hesitant to accept any sort of help or a give, send, go, and I don't want handouts and all of this stuff. And I just said, girl, if people want to support you, because I think they see what you did, and it's taking a stand in a way that's going to have a bigger impact than just your family. I really do think it's going to inspire other parents. And so I think this is just people saying, I want to reward her for doing that, for doing such a difficult thing. And so I know there's a give, send, go out there, and you can use it to try to find a better option for your daughter than that public school. So hopefully you'll accept it and just live with the fact that people wanted to show you some love and support.
I am accepting it, but it's not for me. It's not about me. Never was about me. And I fully intended to be shredded by social media when I posted that. I'm telling you, I made a video about it, blah, 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 blah. I did not expect this, but my full intention was to give it to my... Look, I wanted parents to see this, but I want to emphasize this while I have the chance. Any donation anyone sends goes straight to Remington. She knows it. This is for my child's education, and a proper one at that, and her future. I want to raise leaders of her generation, and that's what I'm trying to do. And you can see it if you meet my kids. You're going to feel that they're good ones.
I love that. You gave me goosebumps. Well, thanks for being the strong woman that you are. Thank you for posting that video, for just giving in and letting us start the Give, Send, Go, which you were not too keen on. But we'll be in touch, Erica, and we'd love to hear how your conversation with the school district goes, okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity to use my voice. Let's do this together. God bless all of these children, even the brainwashed ones, and God bless America, you guys. Thank you so much.
I love it, Mom. God bless all the children, even the brainwashed ones. And that is the truth, is that so many of these kids, I'm not saying kids don't have a brain. I'm not saying kids can't be smart and think for themselves. But in mass, 200 kids, middle of the day, walking out anti-ice. Come on, guys. Come on. It's indoctrination. it's wild. And so God bless that mom for doing what she needed to do. And it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy for her as a single mom to figure out, either financially send your kid to a private school or spend time trying to homeschool your kid and figure that out in the middle of the school year. So again, one of our wonderful viewers started that Give, Send, Go, Matt Gilbert. And so it is a verified one. Help Erica find a suitable school for her daughter. And so I think to reward her for that bravery, which I believe will have ripple effects across the country, I think this is just a great thing to do. So whether you can afford to give or just maybe share it and help her out, but gosh, what an awesome woman. And honestly, guys, that's how we change things, is one pissed off parent at a time, one pissed off parent at a time who comes to the realization that this is not working. And as we discussed with her there, at the same time that you have parents dealing with that, completely unacceptable. You've got elected leaders down in Olympia on the Democratic side to do their buddies at the Washington Education Association a favor, trying to make it more difficult for you to homeschool your kids, trying to make it more difficult for you to send your kids to an online school. And that's because they want to force your child to be in a public school, not only for the money, but for the indoctrination. And it's because it's what the teachers' union wants. We have to fight back with everything that we have. And look, pushing back, a little pushback, can absolutely work. There was a protest that was planned at Chehalis' West High School. They were going to do a walk out there. Well, people raised holy hell, parents and stuff on Facebook, and so they just canceled it. They canceled it. It was going to be this on anti-ICE, and they had a No Kings one that was planned at this high school in Chehalis. And you know what? Parents said enough about it that the organizers were like, okay, we're just not going to do it at all. That is the way. That is the way. If they want to go on their weekend and they want to go out to some street corner and with their woke parents and protest ICE and protest Donald Trump, by all means. But I really have a problem with this stuff happening in the middle of the day. And I would have a problem with it if it was a pro-Trump protest. And I think a lot of Trump-supporting parents would too. It's like, no, get your ass in school. Get your ass in school. Get an education. We don't need They're kids. They have their whole lives ahead of them to worry about politics and who's in the White House and all of these things. They should be in school. And letting them just walk out in the middle of the day is dangerous. Not, it's stupid, but it's dangerous. And it opens up these school districts and taxpayers to an immense amount of liability. All right, I want to talk about two crazy bills that are being pushed in Olympia that we have not discussed on this show so far. They're about regulating ghost guns, 3D printing of guns. But really, when you read the fine print, they're going to do a whole hell of a lot more than that. We'll discuss. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And they are down there in Olympia advocating on your behalf, trying to stop all the stupid policies like rent control from getting even worse. And then day to day, they're helping landlords navigate local regulations, county regulations, state regulations, and just make sure that they, you know, are up to date on all the latest rules, laws, and all of those things. So they are in your corner. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, regardless of how you feel about guns, these are important bills for you to be aware of, for us to track in Olympia, and also for you all to understand how in some of these bills, they slip in these little lines that are designed to give bureaucrats and politicians more power down the road. And so I'm going to discuss an element of the kind of fine print aspect of these bills, but this applies to virtually every other bill in Olympia. I want you always to be looking for little lines like the ones we're going to discuss. So Democrats are saying they're concerned about ghost guns. And I do believe ghost guns are a concern. So, you know, 3D printers are pretty accessible for Americans now. They don't cost an arm and a leg like they used to. And yes, you can 3D print components of, and you can 3D print an operational firearm. And so is that a concern? Is that something? Yeah, I guess. I think there's some elements of it, you know, a gun that won't you know, set off a magnetometer or whatever, a gun that somebody who's a felon might be able to print at home because they can't get a gun any other way. I'm not saying there's not room for conversation and debate about this, but these bills go much further than just trying to keep a 3D printed gun out of the hands of a dangerous criminal. So there's two bills, House Bill 2320, and this regulates the actual printing of guns and gun components. And then there's House Bill 2321. This regulates the printers themselves, and it's, I think, going to be the more concerning of the two. So before I break it down and get into the details of what makes these bills really scary, I'll just read what the NRA had to say about it, because obviously there is a 2A issue that comes into play. So NRA opposed to these bills. They say that they attempt to prohibit the private use of 3D printers and milling machines for manufacturing firearms and firearm parts that are already illegal or restricted under state law. Additionally, House Bill 2320 prohibits the possession of digital instruction files and or code related to firearm components by private individuals, which has both First, Second, and Fifth Amendment implications. They also say the title of the bill is misleading to the public. This bill isn't just about use of 3D machines and digital codes to manufacture firearms. It contains a catch-all stating that the manufacturer assembly of any regulated items by other means is also prohibited. So the NRA says rightly that these bills are about more than what they just seem at first glance. So let's dive into some of the concerning elements about it. So again, House Bill 2320 on 3D printed guns. It says it's an act related to the regulation of firearm manufacturing that involves the use of three-dimensional printers, computer-controlled milling machines, or digital firearm manufacturing codes. So here is a section of it I want you to be aware of. And again, you know, they make it seem like, oh, we can't, you know, this is about prohibiting people from just printing a gun at home, a ghost gun that they can use to go out and kill people, and it's very dangerous. Reasonable people can have a conversation about this issue, right? But it goes in here and it says, no person may possess digital firearm manufacturing codes for a firearm with an intent to distribute the code to a person who is not licensed to manufacture firearms, or with an intent to manufacture a firearm using a three-dimensional printer or computer numerical control milling machine. Possession of digital firearm manufacturing code for a firearm creates a rebuttable presumption of an intent to unlawfully distribute the code or manufacture a firearm in violation of this subsection. So it is saying that not just, like, if you illegally print a gun at home, right? That's not all it's about. If in your possession, the government finds the computer code or instruction to print a gun, that is now against that would also be against the law. So you could have, and I liken this to like the anarchist cookbook or handbook or whatever it is, that'll like teach you how to make a bomb and stuff. I can possess that. That's my First Amendment right. Am I going to use it to create a bomb to hurt people in the pursuit of a political agenda? No. But I have a First Amendment right to possess that book if I'd like to have it. Hell, I can have a copy of Mein Kampf if I really want one. I don't, but I could. And you can't say I can't have that. So this is a terrifying First Amendment issue, where it says just the possession of the code or instructions to 3D print a gun or the component of a gun is against the law. And that last sentence that I just read you, possession of digital firearm manufacturing code for a firearm creates a rebuttable presumption of an intent to unlawfully distribute the code or manufacture a firearm. So rebuttable presumption, what does that mean? It means you're guilty until you prove your innocence. So let's just say, like, I don't know that you got a bunch of codes for 3D printing, and one of them was the component for a firearm, and you have no intention of using it. Like, let's say you don't even know why it's on your computer. Guilty, unless you can prove your innocence beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a rebuttable presumption. So the possession, unless you can prove your innocence, like someone planted this on my computer to try to send me to prison, your job to prove that. So it totally flips on its head the presumption of innocence. And also, the government cannot prohibit me from having the instructions to do something that I never intend to use. Huge First Amendment issue. The second one, though, in the fine print in that, is even scarier. So House Bill 2321, regulating 3D printers. I mean, how many of you have a 3D printer at home? So many people have these nowadays. So it says, you know, what it wants to do is it says that manufacturers of these 3D printing machines have to essentially find a way to install a kill switch that would turn the machine off if it detects that you're printing a firearm or trying to print a firearm or trying to print any component for a firearm. The manufacturers under this law are required to try to come up with some sort of kill switch that would detect that. Well, who's going to come up with and regulate that? Here's the scary part. The Attorney General, in consultation with research institutions, government agencies, or any other organization the Attorney General deems appropriate, shall adopt rules and regulations to establish standards for equipping a printer with the blocking features required by this section and for providing the attestation required by this section. The Attorney General may adopt rules and regulations for any other processes the Attorney General deems necessary to carry out the provisions of this chapter. So the manufacturers of printing machines need to find a way to have this blocking feature. How they do that is going to be approved through the Attorney General of Washington State in consultation with research institutions. The Attorney General is also going to govern the language and the attestation that these companies have to use to tell the government, yes, I did this adequately. And then that last line. You could look out for things like this in virtually any bill, because it's basically a blank check. It says the Attorney General may adopt rules and regulations for any other processes the Attorney General deems necessary to carry out the provisions of this law. Well, what the hell does that mean? It can mean anything they want it to mean. They're granting the Attorney General power to oversee this law and its implementation. And the Attorney General, with that power given to him in that tiny little sentence, can do anything he deems necessary to make it so. They do that in all sorts of bills, and it's terrifying. Gives them total carte blanche, blank check, to further regulate this machine that's in your house. And how the hell are they going to come up with a kill switch for this? You know how many different guns, different components for guns, that you can print using the 3D printer or that the milling machine? It's endless. So you'll be out there, I don't know, what's some nonchalant, yeah, printing, you're just at home using your 3D printer to print a new phone case. That's something people 3D print. Well, all of a sudden that machine shuts down by order of the Attorney General because it looked like you were trying to print a gun magazine or something. How genuine are they going to do that? Because, I don't know, you could take all this code and run it through the machine and say, if you detect any of this code, shut it down. People will just come up with new codes and different ways to print the components of guns and all this stuff. It's impossible to regulate. That's why you can't regulate based off intent or perceived intent. You can only regulate based on actions and punish actions. If someone's not supposed to print a gun and they print a gun, well, then you can go in and do something about it. If someone uses a 3D printed gun in the commission of a crime, then you can go in and do something about it. But the idea that the government is going to be able to successfully regulate whether people in their own home, I mean, think of all the different weapons that you could create on your workbench at home that you could use if you chose to hurt people. I mean, hell, I got a block of steak knives. I mean, how far does it go? Anybody could go out there and find the components to make a pipe bomb. And if you do that and you're caught and you got a pipe bomb, an improvised explosive device, well, there's laws against that. But what are you going to do? Make illegal any possible thing that could ever be used to create a pipe bomb? How is that possible? So this is absolute government overreach. The first one is a huge 1A issue. I mean, that would be challenged, obviously. I don't know what our state Supreme Court would do about it, but you can't punish the possession of essentially reading material. And then we're all gonna, all of you that have 3D printers at home, you're okay with the Attorney General having power over an off switch on that 3D printer? If you print something they don't like? It's as wild as it gets. So it's totally beyond the 2A issue. I mean, you know, I have in a subscriber show poll, which we'll get to coming up later on, I asked you guys if you think people should be able to in America, as long as they're not prohibited from owning firearms, if they should be able to print a gun if they want a gun. And again, I think reasonable people can have discussions and disagreements about that. But it goes well beyond a 2A issue. This is about government overreach into your home. And no matter how you feel about guns, that should be very, very concerning to you. All right, coming up next, a rare win when it comes to school choice in Washington State. First, our friends at Valentine heading into the, oh my gosh, it's February 2nd. What happened? What's happening to 2026? It's crazy. So February is Valentine Roofing Month, and it's all about spreading the love. So if you're a Valentine customer, and if you love your new roof or siding, now is the time to share that level of care with your friends and family. So Valentine Roofing is expanding their customer referral program this month through the end of February. When you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service, or you'll get a $250 gift card. That's pretty sweet. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience: seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service, even in winter weather, and with flexible financing options available with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down, a Valentine roof is built around your budget. So share the love this February. Share the love of Valentine with your friends and family, and you can get a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card in return. And have them call 206 Roofing to schedule their free estimate. 206 Roofing, and then also make sure you get credit for that referral. 206 Roofing. Contact our friends at Valentine. All right, so there was some immense pushback in Olympia from parents over a bill that sought to make it more difficult to homeschool your kids, more cumbersome to homeschool your kids. But some good news, it seems like because of that pushback, maybe Democrats have set this bill on the back burner for the time being. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, so first let me say for the record, nothing is dead until sine die. That's the nerdy little term for the end of the legislative session. So something can maybe not be advancing out of committee, or it looks like Democrats are going to just put it off, but they can always resurrect something. So I don't want to say this is absolutely a done deal, but Republicans believe that Democrats are now backing away from Senate Bill 6261. We discussed it on the show last week, and it would put these new, totally unnecessary, ridiculous regulations on parents who want to homeschool their kids. So it would require you at the age of 6 and at the age of 7 to send these letters to the state of Washington notifying them of your intent to homeschool your child, even though attendance isn't mandatory until the age of 8. And there's a lot of different reasons I believe the state wants to do this. I think that they want to know as early as possible if a parent is going to homeschool their child, so they can, as early as possible, start to try to stop it from happening. And then you've got OSPI that's got this really early list of kids who might be homeschooled, and Lord only knows what they're going to do with it. But the bottom line is it's completely unnecessary. It's an unnecessary step to put these parents through when they shouldn't have to do it until the child is 8, to have them every year telling the state of Washington, yes, I'm going to plan to homeschool my child. Yes, I'm going to plan to homeschool my child. So at this, when it did get a hearing, Senate Bill 6261, who shows up to testify in support of it but the superintendent of public instruction himself, Chris Reichdahl.
I get a lot of data requests, sometimes from you all, saying, hey, when kids start, are they in homeschool, private school, or public school? And right now, unfortunately, we say, well, we can't tell you that. All we know is who's in public school. The private school numbers are okay. They come through the State Board of Ed, but they're not great. And we have no visibility on homeschool, which is a really great model for a lot of families. It's increasing in popularity. There's really high quality homeschool out there. We just want to understand where kids are, like all the other states do.
None of your business. I mean, it's none of your business. Attendance isn't compulsory until the age of 8. So, oh, we just want to understand. We want the stats. Okay, fine. You can want whatever you want. It's not your business. And you just want to insert yourselves as the government into people's lives as early as humanly possible. And the bottom line is, it just is not your business. And parents who want to homeschool their kids, the last thing they want is for OSPI to be tracking this, for the head of the public school system to be tracking their kids earlier and earlier, because there's already probably some distrust there amongst a lot of homeschool parents. And there was one, we should have aired this last week, but we just had so much going on. It might be one of the best clips I've ever seen. So there's this dad that testifies against the bill requiring all these new things for parents. And it's so funny because Chris Reichdahl's there in the room, right? And this dad is talking about Chris Reichdahl while he's present. Listen.
My name is Eric Lundberg from the 2nd Legislative District, Jim McCune's district, my good friend. I am the pastor of Living Word Lutheran Church and the father of 8 homeschoolers. Do not trust this bill, not one bit. Homeschool students make better leaders, employees, and have better chance for success, as most employers look at homeschool students more favorably as they are not conditioned to industrial habits. I believe this bill is a massive attempt at more government control and overreach into the family and an attempt to exhaust them into state submission. The Office of OSPI has turned into an activist organization, as proven by state's own data showing that 60% of students cannot meet state standards in math and 50% are failing in English. Why would we send our kids to our schools? The bill also calls an amendment to an RCW that OSPI approves whether parents are qualified to provide home-based instruction or not. Now, the Office of OSPI, and with all due respect to our state superintendent, cannot articulate the difference between a boy and a girl. Why would we send our kids there?
And then
this is just overreach. Please vote no. Thank you.
And they try to interrupt him. All time, of course. And I just had to laugh at, while this dad is talking, Chris Reichdahl's reactions in the back.
The Office of OSPI has turned into an activist organization, as proven by state's own data showing that 60% of students cannot meet state standards in math and 50% are failing in English. Why would we send our kids to our schools? Now, the Office of OSPI, and with all due respect to our state superintendent, cannot articulate the difference between a boy and a girl. Why would we send our kids there?
That's the most beautiful thing. And I mean, it is true. Here's video of Chris Reichdahl not being able to articulate the difference between a boy and a girl.
We have a civil rights framework in this state. It includes trans youth. This is a biological question. It is quite simply inaccurate to say biologically that there are only boys and there are only girls. There's a continuum. There is a science to this. There are children who are born intersex. There are children whose chromosomes and their hormones aren't consistent with their sex at birth. That's not a debate we're going to have today. I just want to remind you of our civil rights obligation.
It is a debate we're going to have today and every day until we can get back to some semblance of common sense and sanity. So it does seem like this is a win. And I love that Chris Reichdahl himself came to testify in support of this bill. And Senator John Braun, of course, the leading Republican in the Senate, says he confirmed directly with Senator Lisa Wellman, a Democrat, that this bill is not going to advance. So that's a win for parents who don't need the government overseeing their children's future education at the age of 6. It's ridiculous. I love that that dad got to say that while Chris Reichdahl was there in the room. But again, I will just caution you that no bill is dead until the session is over. So it's always possible that they could try to re-up this. So keep making your voices heard and look for opportunities to do so. You can help find opportunities to do so by signing up for Future 42's newsletter. Go to future42.org, future42.org. They're great about sending out action alerts saying, hey, here is this bill. It's an opportunity to testify pro or con. And they can also alert you to just bills you should be aware of, or, you know, rallies and stuff that are happening in Olympia. So sign up for Future 42's newsletter so you can get that stuff straight to your inbox. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, deadly shootings in Seattle over the weekend, including 2 kids outside of public school. And what is Seattle's mayor focused on? Well, ICE, of course. What else? What else but ICE? We'll discuss in our segment, Unbelievable. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team, we get so many fantastic reviews from undivided viewers and listeners about how wonderful it was to have Wes and his team handle their home sale, which can be such a stressful thing, especially if, say, you know, I hear from a lot of people who had to sell a loved one's home, or who were selling their helping the parents sell a childhood home, or who had already moved out of state. They're like, I'm not waiting a day. I'm moving now and we'll sell the home later. And so Wes was so good at just taking the stress off their plate, managing projects, managing cosmetic upgrades and things like that, even if the home seller was already out of state. Anne says it was truly a five-star experience from start to finish with Wes. He and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. She said, when it came time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200 plus people. We got four offers, sold it for $100,000 over asking. You won't find a better team. Five stars. And I agree. Sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. It is insane, the level of obsession with ICE that has always been operating, even in sanctuary jurisdictions, under blue presidents, under red presidents. But of course, as you know, anything Donald Trump does is very, very scary. And look, is President Trump ratcheting up ICE enforcement efforts? Yes, of course. Why do you think he has to do that? Because we had an unprecedented flow of illegal immigration during the Biden administration. Complete open borders. Millions of people unvetted into the country. President Trump said he would get them out if reelected. The American people elected him on that platform. And it's exactly what he's doing. And you have these local sanctuary jurisdictions that say that they want to fight back against ICE in the name of public safety, which makes no sense. But even more so, when you are taking police officers out of their regular duties in cities with high crime, and instead having them spend valuable time and spending valuable resources trying to track, push back, thwart ICE, is that really making your communities more safe? I don't think so. So Exhibit A is the new socialist mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson. She sent out this press release about initial steps to address federal immigration enforcement activities. It says Mayor Wilson announced today an initial set of actions to protect city residents in the face of increased federal immigration enforcement activity. While the city currently has no information indicating a surge of ICE and Border Patrol activity here, there has been increased activity over the last year, and appropriate preparation is critical given the unpredictable, chaotic, and violent behavior of the federal government. So again, just like when that school, those schools all shut down in the middle of the day because someone reported ICE activity and it turned out to be absolutely nothing, this is virtue signaling, because even they acknowledge that they have no concrete evidence of any sort of increased enforcement activity in the city of Seattle. But they're going to do all these things anyway, because Katie Wilson says, whoever you are and wherever you come from, if Seattle is your home, then this is your city. And it's our responsibility as city leaders to move quickly and get organized so we can keep people safe. That's why I'm taking immediate steps today to bar federal agents from using city property or federal civil immigration enforcement activity. We're going to update SPD protocols and support trusted community partners to aid the community response, which is our most powerful tool. So she sends out on X like a bajillion steps they're taking. Now, in the context of this, SPD is about 700 officers short from where it needs to be. Life or death emergencies can take as much as 10 minutes for SPD officers to respond to. We've had an increase in shootings, instances of shots fired. We've been on a trajectory that nationally, you know, the homicide trajectory is improving a little bit, but the city of Seattle has not been on a positive trajectory as it comes to crime. So that's the backdrop under which this is just absurd. So I'm not going to go through all of this, but these are the instructions that the mayor of Seattle is putting out. So she's going to direct SPD to investigate, verify, and document ICE activity. What? You don't even have officers, enough officers to respond to life or death emergencies. And you're going to make them spend their time investigating, verifying, and documenting ICE activity for what purpose? They can't do anything about it. They can't, it's not a crime. So you're going to have officers spend time investigating something that isn't a crime while they should be protecting the citizens of Seattle? She's going to mandate SPD's verified information is shared with community partners. So then SPD not only has to verify, document, investigate, then you've got to put, they're going to push all that out to community partners. It says we're going to prohibit ICE from staging operations on city property. Okay. invest $4 million to support immigrant communities, establish the Stand Together Seattle Initiative, and then she gets into the details of what all of that means and says the federal government is causing profound long-term harm to our country. We all have a responsibility to organize, practice solidarity, and do what we can to keep Seattle safe. So in response to that, the president of the Seattle Police Union went scorched earth on Katie Wilson, Mike Solon. He said, toothless virtue signaling rhetoric like this has already cost two people their lives. The concept of pitting two armed law enforcement agencies against each other is ludicrous and will not happen. I will not allow SPOG members to be used as political pawns. And I think he's referring to in Minneapolis what virtue signaling rhetoric has done there in basically convincing community members to go out and put their bodies on the line to stop ICE. And then you had two people who were killed as a result. And Mike Solon is like, absolutely not. Now, I don't believe Mike Solon has the power to do that. Individual police officers, whether it be their precinct commanders or lieutenants or whatever it is, if they direct officers to comply with the mayor's directive to track and investigate ICE, I guess it's up to individual officers to decide whether they're going to waste their time doing it. And if they refuse to do it, is there going to be a punishment for them for refusing to do so? And this virtue signaling continues on and on and on. I saw this post by the Seattle Police Department. And I commented on it. I'm like, can we just stop? I said, this is so embarrassing. Like, get back to doing your jobs. But it shows how the police department can very easily be used as a tool of a mayor because the mayor controls the police chief. The mayor gets to decide whether the police chief stays or goes. And so they put people in those positions who have no backbone and want to keep their job. And so they're like, yes, Madam Socialist Mayor, we'll direct officers to track ICE down. Look at this post. First of all, look how long it is. This is nutty. And it starts off by saying the Seattle Police Department understands the concern and anxiety created by reports of federal enforcement actions being taken in the city we all hold dear. The department stands by our core beliefs and affirms that we will follow our policies in Washington state law. We aim to be the voice of calm and reason in these confusing times. How is this even something being sent out from a police agency? And it gets into this Know Your Rights training. It says, for information on immigration, resources, and upcoming Know Your Rights trainings, the City of Seattle has the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. I mean, this is fear-mongering coming from a police department, suggesting that it's normal to have anxiety at reports of federal enforcement actions. We're going to be a voice of calm and reason in these confusing times. Do you really think that this post makes you seem like a voice of calm and reason? No, and then it has this long thing about how SPD reacts to suspected ICE activity. And it goes on to say that if there's a 911 call from a citizen about ICE, officers will respond to the location. They'll observe the potential incident. And they'll try to de-escalate or whatever it is. So now these officers and SPD is saying, yeah, we'll show up. We've got your back against the federal government. I mean, this whole thing is absolutely insane and ludicrous, even more so considering we just had several deadly shootings in the city of Seattle. It was a very, very violent weekend. Two of them were in Rainier Valley outside a school where two kids were shot and killed. And then there was in downtown, a parking garage, one dude killed, three others injured after a shooting in Pioneer Square. That's what we need the Seattle Police Department focused on, especially in the lead up to the World Cup, which apparently it's only when we have, you know, the nation's or the world's attention on us where we care about fighting crime. Well, Pioneer Square is pretty close to where the World Cup's going to be. People are getting shot in parking garages. Two kids outside of school, shot and killed, gang activity. Most likely scenario there. And you guys are literally obsessed, while people are dying for public safety because of public safety issues you're not addressing, you're obsessed with virtue signaling over ICE. Like, Katie Wilson literally doesn't care if people die due to crime issues that she's not concerned with. It doesn't help her political career. She doesn't care. She's focused on virtue signaling over ICE, and she's not the only one. And Seattle Police Department isn't the only one. I saw multiple posts from other Seattle or from other police departments in the state of Washington talking about, we know it's scary, that, well, we heard there was a report that ICE might have been in our community. We want you to know we had no involvement in that. It's like, oh my God, what happened to our policing agencies? Wild. And then, of course, Bob Ferguson, we got a ton of emails about this. He had that virtue signaling press conference with Nick Brown last week, and then he sent out this long email to every state employee about how they're preparing to fight back should President Trump surge federal agents to Washington state, even saying that they're working closely with the National Guard to discuss potential scenarios for deploying the National Guard to keep Washingtonians safe in the event of an ICE escalation. So he's literally talking about using our National Guard to fight the federal government, saying these are not political issues. These are issues foundational to our democracy. No, they are political issues. Because if they weren't, you would have been saying something about ICE enforcement when you were Attorney General under President Biden. You were also Attorney General, I believe, at the very tail end of President Obama's time in office. And you were never complaining about these things. And even you're acknowledging in this email that we're not seeing some sort of substantial surge here in federal enforcement activity. So really, nothing different is happening here than happened under Obama or happened under Biden. And you weren't sending out virtue signaling press releases and emails to state employees at the time. This is all about you needing attention for your fight against President Donald Trump. And actual public safety is eroding while you focus on all of that. Unbelievable. All right, we'll get into national news. I've been meaning to give my opinion on the Don Lemon situation. Some of you might not like it, but it is a little nuanced. So we'll dive into that in national news. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you concerned about the future impact AI could have on your retirement portfolio? Well, if you missed Zach Abraham's January 29th live webinar covering all of that, don't worry, because you can schedule your free personal Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark anytime. So they can talk about how AI could have an impact on the 2026 market and your retirement portfolio, how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So if you missed Zach's New Year Reset live webinar, go ahead, go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. You could do a couple things. Subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap and schedule your own free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Again, that's at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, it happened. Don Lemon got arrested by the feds for his involvement or his coverage of that storming of a church in Minneapolis, but he got out and he says he's not worried.
And what this did was really open my eyes to a lot. So if you think that I was outspoken before this, just wait. Just wait. So I know that there are people who think like, oh, you know, do this and, you know, that I'm going to be locked up or whatever. I ain't worried about that.
Yes, you are.
You heard the truth and the truth shall make you free. I ain't even worried about that. Like, not. Don't even think about it. So whatever, you know, whatever happens, I am, I always think that something good is always going to happen. And something usually good always happens if you have that mindset.
Okay. He also said MAGA is a cult. So look, oh gosh, don't come for me, bro. You guys are going to be mad at me. It's fine. I detest Don Lemon. He's become detestable. I had hoped that maybe CNN was the thing that had turned him into a raging lunatic, or he was being told by bosses to act that way. No, this is just who he is, right? So by now you probably know, and I've got some video of this, the background. He had kind of been following this group that had a plan to disrupt this church service in Minneapolis. They did that. They surrounded parishioners. There were kids who were scared and crying, parents who were separated and couldn't get to their kids. And Don Lemon was with this group in the morning, was well aware of what they were going to do, went in there with them. I think he even brought them coffee. I think there was some video of that happening. And so, you know, he was totally aware of everything that was going to happen. Fine. So I understand. I don't think Don Lemon should have been arrested. Don't think Don Lemon should have been arrested. I think that what he did was borderline. But the truth is, we have to have a pretty gracious interpretation of involvement when it comes to someone who's acting in any sort of media capacity. A couple examples of this. I have been out covering riots many times in my career after the police department came on the bullhorns and said, we've declared this a riot. Anyone remaining in the streets is subject to arrest. So should I be arrested in a scenario like that? If I'm out showing people what the rioters are doing, showing the confrontation, showing them assaulting police officers, throwing things, breaking windows, should I be arrested? Because I'm there covering it and I've stayed in the street and I've stayed out there after police declared it a riot. I don't think so. Because if I'm not there, then nobody's going to show what they're doing, right? Some other examples of this. Long time ago, and I won a Edward R. Murrow Award for this story. I did a story about how bad downtown Seattle was getting, and I had a drug dealer who let me go along with them for the night, and I did interviews with them. I was with them during deals. Should I be guilty of trafficking drugs? Because I knew what that drug dealer was going to do. That's why I was with him. I was there while that drug dealer was doing what they were doing. But I was documenting it as part of a story to show how bad things in downtown Seattle were getting, how freely drug traffickers were able to do their business and sell drugs to people that were killing them on the streets. And I knew those drugs they were selling to people could kill that person. I didn't intervene. Should I have been arrested for that? Maybe you think the answer is yes, and then you're being morally consistent. I don't know. I'll give some other examples. You could turn on Discovery Channel, History Channel, any sort of things like that, and look at some of these documentaries. There have been documentaries done with narco terror organizations where their faces are covered. They agree not to film certain parts, and it's to show you how these narco terror organizations operate. I mean, we can go even further than that. Some of these war correspondents that interviewed Hamas during the attack on Israel and the war that followed. I mean, even some fairly high profile national war correspondents, and these were huge gets. Like, I think people won Pulitzers for work like this, when they'd be embedded with literal terrorists who were going out to kill people. So do you see what I'm saying is, where is the line? I mean, Don's detestable. Don absolutely knew that they were going to go into a church, and the Federal FACE Act makes it very clear that if you're disrupting or stopping people from participating in a church service or practicing their religion, that's a federal crime. But I would ask you, how is what Don did any different than every scenario I just laid out for you? And how do you regulate that? You know, in some of the riots that I've been out covering long after they said anyone in the street is subject to arrest, had I not been there recording, people might not have seen what the rioters were doing. You know, I think there is some value to being embedded with criminal enterprises. Now, there's also a line as a journalist, right? Let's say that you're with, you know, is it going to happen with or without you there? And I think when you get into terrorism, you get into all these other issues. Like, do you have a duty to intervene? Like, I'm sorry, if I'm a reporter in the United States, and Hamas agrees to do an interview with me, and Hamas tells me during the interview, oh, we're going to go blow up this building in Israel. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to tell somebody about that. You know what I mean? So I think there is these, you know, hard and fast lines. But I'm sorry. I think it is a very slippery slope for Don Lemon to be arrested for what he did and face federal charges. And I just have to be morally consistent on that. And look, under the Biden administration, I think there was an independent journalist arrested who entered the Capitol on January 6th. I don't think that person should have been arrested. Because you're documenting, and yes, the media and the definition of the media has expanded greatly. And there is this concern about, is it really a member of the media? Or then could Antifa be like, oh, I'm documenting this, and it's like a member of Antifa. You're going to have to figure that out, right? You got to sort that out. Is it actually someone who's engaged in news gathering? Or is it an activist who's just trying to get out of an arrest? It's a complicated situation, but I err on the side of press freedom every single time. So I think the federal government should drop the case against Don Lemon. I don't think they will. I'm sure some of you have some thoughts about that. I'd love to hear them, but I just have to be morally consistent on this issue. All right, let's talk about this massive case involving a detransitioner that I believe is going to be the beginning of the end for the mutilation of kids. So there's a detransitioner had her breasts cut off at the age of 16. So a jury has now awarded this 22-year-old woman $2 million in damages. They found the doctors liable for malpractice. To me, and this is in New York State, beginning of the end. Because if you can say it's malpractice, and it is, to cut off healthy breasts of a teenager, come on, that's malpractice. So in this case, that's what the jury decided. It said, the ruling came down January 30th, found a psychologist and surgeon liable for malpractice after they supported and performed breast removal surgery on a 16-year-old girl who at the time identified as transgender. Fox Varian, now 22, no longer identifies as transgender, was awarded $2 million in damages with $1.6 million for past and future pain and suffering, as well as another $400,000 for future medical expenses. And this is something we hear from detransitioners over and over. The regret, the horror. We've had several on our show. They can never fix what was done for them. And the cost to even try is astronomical. So the jury found that in many respects, the surgeon and psychologist had skipped important steps when evaluating whether she could go forward with the surgery and had not adequately communicated with each other. These missteps were a, quote, departure from the standard of care. And to me, do no harm? How can you cut off the breasts of a healthy girl and say that you did no harm? So this is the message from the law firm that represented this girl. A jury of everyday Americans sent a clear message. Justice will be served for vulnerable individuals who are misled into gender transition procedures without appropriate safeguards. So what does that mean? I mean, if you have doctors that now realize in medical institutions that they could be found guilty of malpractice for performing these mutilations on kids, they might not stop doing it for the right reasons, but they might stop doing it for that reason. And I don't care what the reason is at this point. I just want you to stop doing it. So that's a huge case. All right, Nicole. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, I hear you went to Melania.
Yeah, I just thought I'd show this all.
Yes, the new documentary like just hit a record for an opening weekend for a documentary. It says estimated 600,000 moviegoers saw the film over the weekend. Highest opening of a non-music documentary in more than a decade. 20 Days to History, it's called. Melania. How did you like it?
So I actually thought it was pretty good.
Okay. So what does it show?
Yeah.
What
so is it? It's a little different than I expected. So I knew the cameras followed her around and it was her life. And
okay. And
I thought, you know, this might be good. This will help humanize her. Okay. Right. People think of her as this cold figure. Cold. Yeah. But it actually is only about 2 weeks around the inauguration. So it's kind of, I mean, that's a very different than your regular life time period for her. But you know, I mean, it showed her. It kind of begins with her getting fitted for her dress for the inauguration and her designing it and how involved she is with that. But then it goes on because that part I was like, oh, gosh, this is just feeding into their little hands with this part. But it does go on her dealing with the 1 year anniversary of her mom's death. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to, you know, feature some of her charitable organizing that goes on before they get into the office. So like what she's going to be doing and kind of starting to arrange that. And then it goes through the inauguration, you know, 48, 36 hours where, you know, that chaos and moving into the room that they move it, the house that they move into before they move into the White House and all of that. So so I thought it was pretty good. I think there was a cool musical feature to it. Like she explains that her favorite artist is Michael Jackson and they sing Michael Jackson. She sings it in the car while she's on the way to the inauguration.
Did it humanize her?
I think it did. She smiled a lot. She explains her mission. She explains her family life and why they operate. She, you know, talks about Mar-a-Lago and how comfortable she is there and things like that. So I think it does humanize her.
Yeah.
The interesting exchange that I had this weekend was I saw a lot of people on the other side of the aisle posting on social media, you know, those fake mark safe, you know, you mark safe from a natural disaster. And they were like, they had a fake one that was like mark safe from seeing Melania or whatever. So so I never engage, especially because on Facebook, it's mostly my friends and family. But I just had to because I was so bothered by it because I just think that I asked, what are you so afraid of? Right. Like, if your mark's safe, what are you afraid of? What do you think is going to happen if you see it? And so you're not allowed to see a documentary of somebody that you disagree with, right, or don't like necessarily. Yeah. And so I said, you know, it's not, I used their favorite comparison. And I said, I don't like Hitler. It doesn't mean that I can't watch a documentary about him and things like that. Right. And it was funny because people just kind of, they quieted down a little bit by the end of it.
Whatever their challenge, they realize they're being unhinged.
They're being unhinged, and you can watch this. And I was like, are you afraid it will humanize her for you? Because are you afraid you might not dislike her as much as you thought you should?
You saw it at Cinnabar, and you said there's only two other people there.
Yeah, a couple in their 70s, 80s, a very elderly couple. And but we laughed a lot. My friend and I that watched with me, we looked at each other and laughed quite a bit. Trump is funny in it. I mean, that's who they are. Yeah. They're funny.
Man, I would have been scared that somebody at the theater would have poisoned my food because I was at the Melania documentary.
Literally, we had that discussion. We had that discussion because my friend's sister-in-law, anyways, she texted her and she's like, text me when you're done. Make sure you don't get shot. Like, she was, seeing a movie like this in Seattle, it is a little nerve-wracking. Literally. And I said, I would be more worried about our food. But, you know, I did not feel great after it. But, you know, whatever. I don't think that was just because Cinnabar. Of that.
Who knows?
It was just Cinnabar. But crazy. it was a good movie. We did have some, like, technical ticketing issues. And so, you know, normally you can buy your ticket beforehand and just walk in. So I was like, that was the plan. But then we had to go up to the counter and tell them, like, which movie we were seeing. And that was a little bit scary.
Shouldn't have been, though. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't just crazy. Be. Anyway,
it's ridiculous.
Curious if any of you guys saw it. Your thoughts. We'll get to comments. Thank you, Nicole. Coming up next. First, I have told you guys for years now to take the First Mark Challenge and see if First Mark Insurance can save you a little money or can get you better coverage. Or sometimes they'll tell you that you're paying for too many things, that you have insurance for things you don't need insurance for, types of coverage that you don't need. And so to me, it really just is about making sure that you have the insurance you need, good insurance that's actually going to cover you, and that you're not paying any more for it than you need to. And the best part is First Mark works for you, not the insurance companies. And so they're always going to have your best interest in mind and push you toward doing what's best for you from a financial perspective or from a coverage perspective. So many Undivided viewers and listeners are members of the First Mark family. Connie says, very impressed with First Mark, learned about them on Brandy's show, was looking for a different car insurance company. So I made the call. I received an email from Chase. He was able to save me a considerable amount on my car insurance. Very easy to work with, no high pressure sales ever. I would recommend First Mark to my friends and family. In fact, I already have. Love to hear it, Connie. Become a member of the First Mark family today. It starts by taking the First Mark challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind, as I said. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, a special thank you to our paid subscribers. Do you believe Americans should be able to 3D print guns at home as long as they're not otherwise ineligible to possess a firearm? So, like, you know, of course, if they're already ineligible, like felon or whatever it is, but Nicole, should you be able to 3D print a gun at home?
I don't love the idea of having this no tracking system for guns. I think if you do it appropriately, I think there should be a way to do it and still keep track, right? Because you want to know if guns get stolen, how they're getting out, if they're being secure. I don't know. But I definitely don't believe that they should have some kill switch somewhere and be tracking people the way, or, you know, that having the print or the model for it or whatever it is. But I don't know. It makes me nervous because it's just, you know, a child could get a hold of the plans and then print a gun and you don't know about it. It makes it a lot less secure for parents.
Yeah.
I mean, other people in the house.
You know, the government doesn't know about every gun people have, right? Because you can hand guns down, you can do sort of that. So there's a lot of ways that you can have a gun that isn't, the gun's not tracked, right? I believe that you should be able to. I believe if there's nothing you've done that precludes you or prohibits you from having a firearm, that you should be able to make whatever the hell kind of firearm you want at home. I really do. And if they don't like it, then they should go about and change the Constitution. That's what I always come back to, is like the Constitution is a very simple, the Second Amendment rather, very simple. And so to me, it's about protecting yourself from the government. So it becomes harder to protect yourself from the government if the government is tracking where all the guns are and then can come just take them away from you one day. So if they don't like it, change the Second Amendment. There's a process that the founding fathers put in place to do that. And so if you think that, you know, all the advancements, but like I could, There's a million things I could print on a 3D printer that could hurt somebody.
I guess it's just scary to me that I guess the whole 3D printing is kind of scary to me that it seems like it could easily go wrong. You could have exploding guns. I don't know. It seems scary. I don't know.
That's a you problem, right? You 3D print a gun and it explodes in your hand. You know, maybe that was a bad idea. So 55% of you say yes. So this is actually a pretty split one, 55% to 45%. Tony said, I'm a supporter of the second. I've got lifetime memberships to multiple organizations. I have had permits for many, many years, but this is a no for me because tracking them would be too tricky and because the 3D printer companies will suddenly be held responsible when a printed gun is used in a crime or blows up, to Nicole's point. Shelley, but you can also, people have tried to hold gun manufacturers accountable for when their guns, you know, malfunction or are used in crimes. And so that's really no different than what people try to do right now with firearm manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Shelley said, I said yes, but only as long as the 3D printer is registered and that owner is responsible for the gun that comes from the printer. The gun needs to be registered. Then if someone who is not supposed to have guns yet had a 3D printed one in their possession, would have more charges tacked onto their record if caught. There needs to be accountability. Same as if someone printed one, you know. And look, I don't want criminals to be able to 3D print guns and sneak them into places, pass metal detectors or whatever it is, but they're already possessing guns that they're not supposed to possess. So whether it's a gun they stole off the street or whether it's a gun they printed at home, they're already not supposed to have one.
So that's my only issue. Easy to get a hold of a 3D printed gun.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I don't know. Is it? Is it really that easy to 3D print a gun?
Because we're not really that educated in 3D printing. But I think for some people, I mean, yes, I know children with 3D printers.
Yeah.
It's not hard to get a 3D printer. And that would make it pretty easy to get a 3D printed gun.
Well, apparently it's pretty tricky to be able to print one that actually operates. Okay. Devin said, yes, Americans have been allowed to manufacture their own firearms since the country was founded. 3D printed firearms aren't all the hype they're cracked up to be, both in crime statistics and in quality of the product. The legislature needs to move along. I really think the only people doing this are like terrorists and, you know, spies and assassins trying to get guns into places that they might be detected or whatever. Maybe I watched too many movies. I don't know.
It probably is just this, you know, a couple people have done it and they're like, oh, we need a law.
Yeah. And they're trying to do much more than just regulate guns here. All right. Let's get some comments from the live stream handpicked by Miranda. Do you want to join me? Okay. Mm-hmm. On the mom yanking your daughter from school, Little Miss J, Erica, we appreciate you and you can do it. I have two daughters with disabilities and I'm going to and I'm doing better homeschooling rather than in school. And Miranda, if you're listening, if you can put the Give, Send, Go link in the live chat, maybe Nicole, you can help her find that.
Okay.
I think that would be good. We can help Erica out. Old Sub Sailor, as we all know, the radical left wants to destroy the nuclear family. They have taken over the schools and turned them into radicalization indoctrination centers as part of the communist manifesto. Sherry, I stand behind her. I watched her when she first saw what was going on and I applauded that parents... I was appalled that parents aren't being notified, rather. They're supposed to be teaching our kids, not indoctrinating them. Most of those kids don't even know why they're standing outside. And then to get out of class, I mean, that's the thing, too, is so many of these kids are like, I can skip class? Great. And I'm glad the Auburn School District said, well, this is a truancy. So you're marked absent if you walk outside because you're not going to class. But if you leave campus, you're truant. And so I'm glad there's consequences. But also, like, I'm sorry, come on. You're out there, you got your vests ready, and you're directing them so they can be in the street. It's like, no, direct them back inside.
And it's just ridiculous. Absolutely interfering with other children's education. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's against their own rules.
Rick makes a good point. Simply based on the office staff saying that no one was available to go get her child, quote, because everyone is outside. That shows the learning environment was impacted, right? You can't say, you said you have a district policy that says they can protest as long as the learning environment isn't impacted. How is the learning environment not being impacted?
Mm-hmm.
That literally makes no sense. All right, let me see. On legislators targeting the 3D printers, Wes Motorsports says the government will never stop us from anything firearms related. People will always find a way around it. Look, you overregulate guns, people are going to start 3D printing them at home. Yeah. I mean, it took me a month to get my firearm. So, and that's going to be even more. This new law goes into effect in Washington. Now, in order to get a gun, you have to go to a range. Nah, I'm going to 3D print that shit at home. You know what I mean?
that might be a reason.
When they restrict your 2A rights so much, that's pushing people to do these other things. So it's just crazy.
This is probably a reaction to it,
right? John Thomas, I was watching a content creator that 3D prints stuff. It will make it it will make it so you can't print offline. You'll have to connect to the internet or it won't print. You should interview him. I'll try to find it. That's interesting. So the only way they can monitor and shut it down is if your 3D printer has to some way be connected to the internet. And it's not like an internal kill switch. I'd be interested in learning more about that. Let me see. Jeremy says, thank you. Jeremy Hubble actually printed our 3D printed our mic flags. Yeah. Our wonderful viewer, Jeremy Hubble, and he says, thank you for this. This 3D printing thing is a massive overstep by Washington. It's incredibly restrictive and covers all additive and subtractive manufacturing. All right, on the legislature for now, pulling the homeschool bill, De Pluribus Unum says they will wait until you're not looking and sneak it in another bill. Oh, we're always watching.
And you know what? This might be a distraction from that online bill because this one, I mean, I was against it. I don't like any of it.
Yeah.
However, it was less impactful than the online bill. And I feel like by giving them a win here, maybe they're going to push that one. And that's going to impact a lot of kids because there's a lot of online
kids. And Erica wants to maybe have her kid do online school. And they're trying to make that more difficult for moms like her. It's ridiculous.
It will end it.
Yeah. On Seattle's mayor wanting police to track ICE, R.M. Colm says local government has never existed for ideology. It has no place in municipal functioning. Mm-hmm. Lately, it seems like that's all they exist for is ideology. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Miranda put a little asterisk in this. Should Don Lemon have been arrested? Miranda wrote this. Brandy, the chat overwhelmingly does not agree with you. Mm-hmm. LOL. Thanks, Miranda. I knew that would be the case. Is there anyone who agreed with me? Mm-hmm. Sergeant Buck, being a journalist doesn't give you the right to trespass after being asked to leave. Was Don asked to leave in a video?
I mean, the churchgoers were obviously asking him to leave.
Don Lemon. So maybe that's different. Maybe I hadn't seen a part where they specifically said to Don Lemon, you need to leave because you can't be on. And I would never stay on private property if I were asked to leave. So if I got to look at that video, if they specifically told Don, like, you need to leave and he stayed, then that's an issue. Mm-hmm. Country guy, his grandstanding violated the parishioner's right to peacefully assemble and worship. All right. One more super chat. Lil Miss J says, Brandy, I loved your interview with Brett Weinstein. Too bad his wife, Heather, couldn't be there, too. I'm about halfway through and really appreciated both of your thoughts and conversations. Looking for more. Yeah, I did. I went to Friday Harbor to do an interview with Brett Weinstein, which was such a cool experience for me. Such a smart guy. Was a former Evergreen State College professor who got caught up in this cancel culture thing. And now he's like me and went through a red pilling. Mm-hmm. He still considers himself on the left, which I sort of challenge his definition of that in the interview. But we talked for 2.5 hours. Love it. He's just such a smart guy. So you can check that out on the Dark Horse podcast on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. It was a fun experience. Mm-hmm. All right, Nicole, thank you. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. The first thing I want to tell you is just a reminder to help us fight for sanity for girls and parents in Olympia tomorrow. I know it's difficult to get down to Olympia in the middle of the day. I know for some of you that means taking a bus. I know for some of you that means taking a day off work. If you can make it happen, make it happen. We need people to show up for these girls and these parents. So we're going to have the rally at 2:30 p.m. There's going to be a lot of great voices there from girls to parents. And also Tish Hyman is going to be there. So you all know Tish from the viral video of the black lesbian who confronted the man in her locker room at a Gold Gym in Los Angeles. Tish was our guest yesterday on Sundays with Subscribers, and I asked her sort of, you know, this was unexpected for her. She was like a musician, an artist, trying to work out in the gym. She was going actually through this period of like, she lost like 100 pounds and she was going through this period of self-improvement. And then she gets dudes in the locker room in Los Angeles. And now that this has thrust her into really this completely different life where now she's advocating for this issue. She's running for the mayor of Los Angeles. So I asked her kind of her message to people who know that what's happening is wrong, but haven't found their voice yet. You know, for the girls who, and there's going to be some of them who have been very brave, who have started to speak out for themselves. I can't even imagine having to do that at 14, 15, 16. But what would your message be for the young women in America who are seeing so many adults, so many men and women who are refusing to advocate for them and refusing to just tell the truth about how stupid this is?
You know, listen, I don't know what goes on in a person's mind, Some people are scared to be canceled. Some people are scared to be judged. Some people are scared because their kids are trans and they've been idolized, I mean, brainwashed by this ideology. There is a lot of reasons for a person to not want to stand. But regardless of that, I say stand in the way that you can. Whether it's you donate to a cause, supporting it secretly, or you try your best to like organize people in your neighborhood who think how you think and find a way to make your difference in this. Not everyone can be loud and scream out big D's in the locker room. And I don't recommend it, ladies, because it's scary. And the only reason why I was able to do that is because I was actually scared. And I ran out and I got men. So that's my recommendation. My recommendation is don't argue with these men in the locker rooms. It could get very dangerous and you could cause yourself a really traumatic experience by trying to combat these men. They're stronger. Just run out and get help. But whatever you can do, you need to understand how serious this is. Now, this is coming from a lesbian with no children, y'all. It's serious. I'm serious.
Yeah, so she's involved. She wants other people to stand up. And, you know, that's fair. In the way that you can. Maybe it's not, you know, becoming this outspoken advocate. Maybe that's just not something you can do right now, although I want everyone to be as outspoken as they can. Stand up in the way that you can stand up for girls and parents. And if you can be there with me, with Tish, with Brian Haywood, with Jamie Reed, the whistleblower on radical gender ideology, if you can be there tomorrow at the state capitol in Olympia, 2:30 p.m. to rally for the two initiatives that Democrats refuse to give a hearing to, we would love to have you there standing alongside us. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Again, no live show tomorrow. We are down in Olympia. We're going to be down there fighting the good fight. We will, however, have an interview we're going to publish in the morning, very timely, with Jen Say. Jen is the founder of XXXY Athletics, has been a leading voice on trying to protect girls' sports and girls' spaces. So we're going to have an interview with her that we're going to publish in the morning since we won't have a live show. But I expect those of you who can be in Olympia tomorrow to be in Olympia, rain or shine. We'll see you at 2:30. And if you'd like to sign up to support our work and our show, you can do that by going to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. It's that simple. All right, we will see you tomorrow. Hopefully. Nicole's trying to put me in a corner. Stop muting my mic, Nicole. I have things to say. Okay, you can mute it now.